Yeah, thank you very much. As Brett said, this is a slightly general topic, but I hope it's useful in various applications you might consider of statistical mechanics, because statistical mechanics is a very general theory, and it really, I think, has a couple of nice applications in turbulent flows as well. And so that's what I want to explain here in an easygoing way. And I also want to compare a little bit with experimental data, some predictions. And for that, I have actually prepared a handout. But that is not the only reason. The other reason is that my handwriting is terrible. And so you have a chance to really see what I really mean. Okay. So if you pass that through. So. But that is from a similar talk I gave in the UK recently. And so it's just that you have the pictures I'm referring to in printed way. I should be one. It should be more or less enough. Yeah, so everybody who has been at an undergraduate course on statistical physics knows, of course, the main message of statistical mechanics is that if you have a state with energy E, then
we don't have enough to go around.
Then the probability, yeah. Okay. So the oh, there's one more here actually.
If you still have a copy, it's...
Hello.
Oh, we can share this.
Okay, so the probability in statistical mechanics, if you have a system with Hamiltonian H and the probability to see that system in the state described by E is, of course, given by E to the minus beta E Boltzmann factor, and that is the central message of statistical mechanics. And as you see, the basic idea of statistical mechanics is really that the temperature beta, which is 1 over kT, that is constant, right? But that is not suitable for many complex situations, and very often you will simply have a non-equilibrium situation, and that is simply something like that, that you have a spatial region with different regions of different inverse temperature, right? So there's an inverse temperature beta 1 here and beta 1, 2, beta 3 here and so on. And beta is, of course, 1 over kT. Now, that means that for this situation, which occurs in many turbulent flows, for example, yesterday we had these nice simulations there of Rayleigh-Benard, where you have these big patches of temperature being something here and something else there, right? So that means that statistical mechanics in its original form is not valid for that, because it's not constant in that system. But people start thinking that one could do still something with the statistical mechanics in this sense. And so the simplest example, if you have such a situation, is that you consider, let's say, a Brownian particle that starts moving here and then moves here. And during the diffusion process of that particle, it sees a mixture of different temperatures, right? And that is also true in turbulent flows in particular in Lagrangian turbulence, where you are interested in following a particular test particle in the turbulent flow, then that will see a changing environment during the entire process, right? So let me just give a very simple example of what I'm going to talk about. So you have, of course, in non-equilibrium statistical mechanics, a lot of systems are modeled by stochastic differential equations. So let me just write down the simplest one, a linear Langevin equation to illustrate the concept. So this is here simply Gaussian white noise. And this is, that should be V here. So this is the velocity of a Brownian particle. V dot is equals to minus gamma V. There's a damping constant gamma. And you drive the system by Gaussian white noise of strength sigma. Right. And now the connection to statistical mechanics is simply that if the Einstein relation is really that beta equals 1 over kT is equal to the parameters here, equal to gamma over 2 sigma squared. In equilibrium, this just generates a Gaussian distribution for the particle. Everybody knows that, right? But now if you have something like that, then apparently the variance of that Gaussian will fluctuate during the time evolution, right? And so let me give you just one example. If you assume that the probability density to see a particular beta here in these cells is given by the chi-square distribution, that is this distribution, beta to the n half minus 1, e to the minus n beta over 2 beta 0. That's called the chi-square distribution or gamma distribution, right? That arises very naturally in many situations. For example, if you assume that beta, the inverse temperature, is a sum of Gaussian random bubbles xi squared, and you take n of those, from 1 to n, then this random variable has that distribution, right? That is well known. So assume that as an example. So then if the beta has this distribution, then also the parameters in the Langevin equation have that distribution. And then, of course, everybody can solve this system because you just do a little bit of probability theory. So the probability to see a velocity V of the Brownian particle given a particular inverse temperature is certainly Gaussian. So that is proportional to a Gaussian. Okay, and the joint probability is then certainly something like that. So the probability that the particle has a velocity v and that at the same time you're in a cell that has the inverse temperature beta, that is simply then the product of the conditional probability p of v given beta times the probability density to find a particular beta, right? But what is measured in many experiments is really what is called the marginal distribution, which is simply the P of V, where you integrate over all possible temperatures, right? So it's the integral of P of F of beta, P, P of V given that beta. That is called the marginal distribution, and this beta can take on any values between 0 and infinity. It's distributed with this f of beta. Now, if you just plug that in, take this f of beta as an example, the chi-square distribution of inverse temperature, and the Gaussian distribution here, then you can simply do the integral, and the result can be written in this form. So P of V, right here, P of V is simply 1 over 1 plus a half beta tilde. I've introduced parameter q minus 1 here, v squared, and the whole thing to the power 1 over q minus 1. And this q is simply related to the n that I introduced before by 1 over 2 n plus 1. And what else? The beta tilde that occurs here is just 2 beta 0 over 3 minus q. And finally, what is beta 0? It's just the average. Beta 0 is the average temperature in that system, or inverse temperature. Right? So this is simply a mathematical identity. You can look it up in the integral tables or just do the integral yourself. But that's a very interesting example, and let me recall it's just an example of many much more general situations. You start from a simple Gaussian stochastic process. You start from a usual type of statistical mechanics, and you end up with a power law, because this is for v going to infinity, that goes like v to the minus 2 over q minus 1, right? So you have simply from a fluctuating environment a power law. Now the idea is, this is just an example, but you can generalize it in many, many ways, which make it interesting also for turbulence. First of all, the distribution of the inverse temperature, that is really something generated by the strong driving of your system, let's say, in a really benign situation or in turbulence. That is one generalization. So the f of beta can be a priori any probability density, right? Then the other thing is we need not just to look at the Brownian particle, we can do a much more complex system, right? We can do your favorite statistical mechanics system and consider that in such an inhomogeneous environment, right? So that means this equation here in general will be much more complicated. It could be your favorite stochastic differential equation, where you let the parameters fluctuate in addition to what you're usually keeping constant. And that is another generalization. And the third generalization is that the meaning of the variables need not to be as in this example. So if you have generally a stochastic differential equation that can model a lot of things also for complex systems, need not to be just the velocity of a particle, can be other things as well. And also this parameter here, the beta, need not to be an inverse temperature. For example, there are other examples where it is, for example, a density may fluctuate in a spatial way in your turbulent flow or elsewhere. So there are lots of generalizations of this idea, but the principal idea, people then try to still do statistical mechanics in this situation simply by regarding this quantity, this P of E here, where you have a general F of beta and a normal type of Boltzmann factor e to the minus beta e, but then you integrate over all these possible inverse temperatures.
Question, I mean, yes. This probability distribution, I mean, it's not going to have an expectation for beta squared, for example, on it, isn't that?
That depends on what value of q you take. So what the parameter q is, right? You're right. If n is very small, if it's 1 or so, then the variance does not exist. But you can show that this goes like v to the 2 over q minus 1. And if you put an additional v squared here to get the second moment, then there is a maximum Q where the second moment still exists, and I think that is given by 1.66 or something like that. But typically one looks at these things at Q values, say 1.1 or 1.3, so that still exists then. But you're right, there's a maximum moment that doesn't exist for channel Q.
Are we always going to be considering a beta that is statistical? It's given by a probability distribution instead of being prescribed by
yes. gradient. Yes. No, it is really given by a probability distribution. If it is a gradient, let's say in a turbulent flow, very often it's given by some gradient equation, then your task is first to get the f of beta out of your equation that you consider for the beta, and then you can do this formalism. Yeah. And I will comment on possible f of beta that arise in many situations. Right? Mm-hmm. Any other questions right now? Okay. So now the thing is, if you have such a thing, then this is not anymore an exponential. It can be a power law, can be other functions of E, and that means formerly, people now, at least a couple of years ago, it was a bit fashionable, let's say, that they introduced more channel entropies that you maximize, and then you get that P of E out of your maximum entropy principle subject to certain constraints. And so, for example, if you take this example of the chi-square distribution for beta, then such a channelized Boltzmann factor, for example, maximizes the Zahles entropy, which is given by this formula. So you take S equals minus 1, Q minus 1, or I think it's without the minus Pi to the Q minus 1. So if you have microscopic probabilities, Pi, and raise them to the power Q, then that function is called Zahles entropy, and you can show if you maximize that entropy subject to constraints, you end up just with the probability densities of that form, which are Q Gaussians or Q exponentials, they are sometimes called. And this, of course, goes to the usual entropy minus Pi, log Pi, that you normally maximize in statistical mechanics, that goes to that for Q going to 1, right? So if you do Q going to 1, you end up with the usual entropy, the Boltzmann-Gibbs-Shannon entropy, and that you can also see directly here if you do the limit Q going to 1, then this goes to 0, but that goes to infinity, so the entire thing will go to e to the minus a half beta v squared, the ordinary Boltzmann factor. Therefore, it's sort of a formal deformation of the usual type of statistical mechanics, if you like. But that's only a formal thing. The main thing is that you simply have from these inhomogeneities some deformed Boltzmann factor, and also that some systems that have very strong interactions, Pierre Chavanille is doing a lot of stuff in that direction. They also can have non-Boltzmann distributions due to other effects, due to long-range interactions, and then you kind of end up sometimes in a formal way also with a more general statistical mechanics. So that is the idea. And now, as Brad said correctly, we need to perhaps decide what are suitable f of beta in many applications. Of course, a priori f of beta, this distribution of temperature, can be anything. But it turns out if you look at many complex systems that that you end up basically with three different main distributions. And I should also say this formalism here is sometimes called super statistics. The name sounds perhaps a bit exaggerated, but it simply means that it's a superposition of two statistics. One is ordinary statistical mechanics here in the e to the minus beta e, but since the temperature is also distributed, you superimpose many statistical mechanics at different inverse temperatures. Therefore, some people call it super statistics. Okay, now let's look at the relevant f of beta that you get in many applications, and there we come to turbulence in a second. So it turns out when you look at real systems that have applications in turbulence, but also in other areas of complex systems, then more or less three distributions occur very frequently. And so accordingly, we have three universality classes, if you like. Of super statistics. Okay, and so the first one, A, is this chi-square super statistics. Where the f of beta is precisely given by this formula up to a constant here. Normalization constant here. So, and okay, I'll write it down again. Beta to the n halves minus 1 e to the minus beta and beta over 2 beta 0. That is one thing that you observe very often. The other thing is what is called inverse chi-square superstatistics. And that corresponds to the case that you have the following probability density, f of beta is given by, yeah, the formula you have here, beta to the n halves minus 2. N is, of course, an adjustable parameter describing the degrees of freedom of the fluctuations in beta, right? So e to the minus n beta 0 over 2 beta. You see, the difference is now that you have a 1 over beta in the exponential. Here you had beta up there. It's a 1 over beta. And the third universality class is really log normal superstatistics. Where the f of beta is the log normal distribution, so it's proportional to, log normal distribution you can write like that, 1 over beta, an exponential of, then you have a Gaussian log beta, right? So ln beta over some mean parameter mu, squared over 2s squared. And now you may ask a priori, any f of beta could be possible depending on what type of system you're looking at, but why the hell do we get very often these three distributions? And the reason is really kind of an empirical argument. If you, first of all, this formula here, that generates chi-square superstatistics, and it's pretty plausible. Suppose you have your complicated turbulent system or whatever you are interested in, very nonlinear, very driven with spatial inhomogeneities. Still in that system, there will be often a lot of microscopic random variables that more or less are independent. So if you have these microscopic random variables, let's call them Xi j, and you add them up, and let's say j from 1 to j, and we scale them by square root of j, then this becomes a Gaussian random variable due to the ordinary central limit theorem, right? Whatever degrees you have in your system, right? And if these Xi j are sufficiently independent, in fact, one can prove central limit theorems also for weakly independent random variables Xi j. So for large j, you simply get a Gaussian here, and now the parameter beta that describes your inverse temperature. Temperature is always something positive, right? So you couldn't really take the temperature to be a sum of Gaussian random variables that would generate negative temperatures as well. So the next simplest thing is to square them, and then you end up with that distribution. Yeah.
I just have maybe a simple question. So it looks like this formula which you wrote at the bottom is just a Laplace transform of one factor.
It is, right? Indeed.
So yeah. And you say that for some reason Laplace transform has some physical meaning that what we should look at, not at the function itself. Right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's very simple. You can see it as a Laplace transform. Indeed. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, but then,
I will come to physical meaning examples very soon. And, also, I avoid a bit the difficulty, so it may look a bit trivial to you, but it's really interesting stuff. Yeah?
So these distributions, there's no correlation. These regions they're uncorrelated, different data. There's something implied separation of scale.
Oh yeah, that's an important point, right? So if I go back to illustrate this here, right? So the beta was gamma over 2 sigma squared. Now, you indeed need a separation of time scales here to make this work, because you see, first you need that these temperature fluctuations take place on a long time scale or a long spatial scale. Otherwise, this system wouldn't have enough time to relax to the local equilibrium state. And if it doesn't have enough time, then it would not be described by a Gaussian, right? So this simple picture of having a superposition, let's say, of Gaussians requires that first the system locally relaxes to local equilibrium, and then afterwards you do this average over the many different inverse temperatures. And that's a very important point. You need time scale separation in your system. Then this very simple description in terms of the Laplace transform, so to speak, can be done. But if you don't have that time scale separation, then this is not a Gaussian, and then you have some mass, something complicated.
But you can still consider Laplace transforms.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But then I have a question about this first equation. It's a very special equation, right? Actually, a Ostidal Coulombic equation, which leads to the Gaussian.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you take pretty much any arbitrary partial differential equation.
Yeah, yeah, that's what.
Differential with a stochastic noise, it won't lead to the Gaussian.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I said. I started with a very simplest example just to illustrate the method. And then I said later, oh, I replaced that by something much more complicated. Yeah, so I could put in here any stochastic differential equation which generates non-Gaussian behavior. Yeah. And then you do, again, for that kind of superstatistics. And that is represented, in fact, by this energy E. If you have a very complicated system of statistical mechanics with long-range interactions with whatever you want it to be, then certainly you don't have Gaussians here, but something much more complicated.
You know? If you had a Brownian particle in a fluid at different temperatures, then this is what you get. But as soon as you had a particle suspended in turbulence, the correlations
are
critical in determining
the motion. Yes, indeed. So you can have much more complicated distributions in turbulence, and indeed I will come to these measurements and very soon. Okay, so yeah, so now talking about turbulence, this one looks well suited for many turbulence problems because it reminds us a bit of the cascade, of the Richardson cascade, if you have a log normal distribution, because if you have these Gaussians and the beta being sort of a sum of Gaussian squared, that is something that may occur very often. If you replace beta by beta to the minus one, then you can show that you end up on the second class here, then the beta is distributed according to that one. And if you have kind of a multiplicative process, let's say that the relevant random variables in your system, the rapidly fluctuating ones, may perhaps occur in a product-like structure like that, so you have something from here to J, that might be a relevant random variable, call it xi in your system, depending on some product of random variables. And then, of course, you can take the logarithm here in the usual way, and you get a sum over the logarithms of the xi j. And if you rescale that, and if it's lots of them, then this logarithm of xi will become Gaussian. That means the original distribution will be log normally distributed. So if you have such a multiplicative structure, then the log normal distribution for f of beta may be a very good model of what you get really in your system, right? And okay, so I think it's about time. Yeah, that I come to, but it is this general argument is then showing you if on physical grounds there are not so many different possibilities, right? You always have a complex system with lots of degrees of freedom, and then the more or less independent random variables, they will produce something that is Gaussian, and this Gaussian random variables combine to something that give this parameter that fluctuates in a superstatistical way, either like that, or you take beta to the minus one, or you have a product structure. And that is an intuitive argument that not really any distribution f of beta, but these three occur pretty often. But it is very important to distinguish these three cases, because the asymptotics is different. If you have this one for energy e going to infinity, then this goes like a power law. The p of v, let's say, that you get here, that goes like a power law for large v of large energies e. So this generates power laws. And this, if you plug that in, do this integral here, then you get something that goes like e to the minus the constant times the square root of e for large e, right? For this quantity here. E is, of course, related to the velocity in the simplest case of the Brownian particle by the kinetic energy. But again, if you have a statistical mechanics or a more complicated stochastic differential equation, then that E would be a more complicated function, right? So, but you see the asymptotics is very different. Here you get something square root of E. So if V is the velocity, you get something that goes exponentially in the velocity rather than the velocity squared for this P of E here. And the asymptotics here for the log normal distribution, that can't even be evaluate it in a simple way. If you do the asymptotics for large V here, you get an exponential of some Lambert function squared, a rather complicated expression. Numerically, it's sort of also a tail, but neither power law nor exponential. And stretched exponentials can also be put into this framework. Okay, now it's time to go really to turbulence, right? I simply want to show you that it is useful for some aspects of turbulence, and we don't really want to understand the entire spatial-temporal statistics of turbulence, but simply find a good stochastic process that models a test particle that is embedded in the turbulent flow. Okay. So, for example, in some 10 years ago, there was an H paper by Eberhard Bodenschatz, and he looked at the velocity statistics of particles in strongly turbulent flow. I think it was Taylor-Cuvier at very high Reynolds number, and the result of his measurement is on page 13 here, right? So you have here the acceleration in units of the standard deviation, and the P of A, the probability to see a certain acceleration of the test particle in the turbulent flow is shown there. And it's a logarithmic plot, so it's very strongly non-Gaussian, that acceleration distribution of that single test particle embedded in the turbulent flow. And the question is, why is that so? I mean, of course, we all intuitively know it must be like that because this plot is, for example, representative. If you take the test particle to be an aeroplane, let's say, and the turbulent flow is just the turbulence around the aeroplane, then you know very often you have these strong bumps, right? So they occur with relatively high probability. If they occurred with the Gaussian distribution, you wouldn't feel them really. So it's really that distribution there. And that was very precisely measured in this Nature paper in 2001 by Bodenschatz. You see the scale is to 60 standard deviations, right? But once again, it's Lagrangian turbulence, so it's just one single test particle embedded in the turbulent flow has that acceleration distribution. So you can make various models for that, and the simplest one really leads to log normal superstatistics. So what you do is you regard the velocity of that particle, you look at it at time t plus tau minus V of t, I call that U of t. So it's looked at a small time scale because he measures accelerations A as just a change of velocity on a small time scale tau, right? And then the simplest, and it's really a model, but it features it explains most of the experimental data pretty well. You simply then look at a local simple dynamics, local relaxation dynamics. So you say that a local velocity difference of that particle in the flow relaxes with some constant gamma. There may also be some rotational element from vorticity, so plug in perhaps some Ren vector n, and around that direction locally that particle rotates, and then there are these rapidly fluctuating chaotic driving forces in the full turbulence case. If you if you go to weak turbulence, this would be something much less, much more complicated, but we expect for really hard turbulence, this basically getting closer and closer to rapidly fluctuating chaotic driving force similar to Gaussian white noise. And but it's now a different application, because in non-equilibrium statistical mechanics, people look at these types of equations, and this represents really the molecules that kick the Brownian particle, right? But in a turbulent flow, this is on different timescales. It's really the chaoticity of the turbulent flow that is represented by that. Okay, and then you calculate a little bit with this model, and out of this model comes the following probability distribution for a single acceleration component of that particle, and it is just what you expect, the kind of super statistics formula, but you have then here the f of beta, which we take to be log normally distributed, because we want to represent the turbulent cascade and things like that, which are best represented by log normal statistics. And then you have here this kind of Boltzmann factor like that. Ax squared d beta. But note, it's now a very different meaning of the variables. So it's not the velocity, but the velocity difference, the acceleration that enters here. This beta is not the physical temperature in the flow, but it is if you do further model assumptions, you can relate it to the fluctuating energy dissipation in the flow. So you simply say the particle at some stage sees this energy dissipation, and at a later stage a different energy dissipation, and therefore this fluctuates. And if you borrow out Kolmogorov 62 theory or so, then it is very plausible to take the log normal distribution here. And in this way, you get a concrete formula, and you see then in equation on page 13 that the solid line is simply this formula, and it fits the data very, very well, over 60 orders of magnitude, because it's the acceleration in the units of the standard deviation that is plotted on the x-axis.
How many parameters were adjusted?
That is, in this case, it is basically one parameter, this S, which is the variance of the log normal distribution. That is fitted. And another parameter is, so to speak, eliminated, because you look at the acceleration in units of the standard deviation. Therefore, that standard deviation is also a bit eliminated. So the answer is 1 to 2, depending how you mean it. But again, I think before these measurements, a lot of people thought that more or less these processes are Gaussian in turbulence, and they are not. They're strongly non-Gaussian, but you can save the Gaussian structure locally, in a sense, if you assume that the parameters of your Gaussian local dynamics are fluctuating on a large timescale, and in this way make it coincide with the experiments. And another interesting thing is that in other measurements of Bogenschatz for these single particles, he studied ratios like that, describing correlations in acceleration pattern, and so that was, for example, this quantity he measured. The probability P that the particle has an acceleration AX in X direction and at the same time an acceleration AY in Y direction. And that you can divide, of course, by the one-point probabilities, just the probability to have an acceleration ax in x direction times the probability to have another acceleration ay in y direction. And certainly, if these two components are independent, then that ratio should be just one. But it is not, and it's a complicated pattern which you see here on page 15 that is being measured in these measurements. T-like structure, the gray tones represent different values of this ratio here. And that ratio, the model is simple enough if you let these parameters fluctuate in the equation, right? Once again, I should say this is just a linear equation. It would just generate Gaussian behavior, but we let the gamma and the direction of the random vector around which the particle fluctuate, we let that fluctuate on a large superstatistical timescale and then integrate over everything. And then you get these types of formulas. And for the ratio, you get another formula that is written down here. Basically, it's what you would expect. So you have beta, f of beta, which is the log normal distribution. Then you have here the exponential of ax squared.
Because the fact is r is not zero, and that's a consequence that for any isotropic distribution it's not Gaussian, that will be non-zero.
Exactly. Yeah, it's simply a constant, and that's what I want to say. It's simply a fact that it is not a Gaussian distribution. I just illustrate that here. But let me say, in the paper, it was sold as something in the measurements of Bodenschatz as something very fundamental to turbulent flows, that there are these correlations, right? And but you see, it arises from a simple pattern, basically what you said, namely that if you have a non-Gaussian distribution, then this is simply something more complicated, right? So, but I illustrated here. Just to explain the typical features, so that formula you have also. Oh, yeah, I should hurry up a bit. Right, so you see, it's simply quite a nice illustration. Suppose there were no fluctuations of this parameter beta, which we relate to the fluctuating energy dissipation rate, then the f of beta would simply have a fixed value. So the distribution would be, let's say, delta of beta minus beta zero, where beta zero is some fixed parameter, right? If you have such a delta function, then all these integrals here just disappear from the delta function, and you have the exponential here of ax squared plus ay squared over the two exponential gives you just one, right? But since this parameter fluctuates, this is has a broader distribution, and therefore you if you do the ratio, you get something that is different from one, and that is plotted here in this plot at the top of page 15, and it fits again the measurement data very well. So I think one can say that many features of turbulent flows, which a priori may sound surprising, if that can already be explained by models like that. But the real tough thing is to motivate why a highly turbulent flow effectively produces something like that, effectively, for a single test particle, right? to derive that from the Navier-Stokes equation, the full spatiotemporal PDEs is very, very hard, and nobody has succeeded it. But just comparing with the data, it is a fact that this terribly complicated turbulence problem, if you just look at a single test particle embedded in the flow, leads to a simple superstatistical stochastic process, so that these techniques from statistical mechanics can be applied in principle. Okay, I will use the last 10 minutes for quantum turbulence. So if you have a quantum liquid where really liquid helium at low temperatures, and that is driven, and again you can do measurements of the velocity distribution of the particle. Now in this case, for the classical turbulence, it was mainly the velocity difference that is non-trivially distributed, whereas the velocity of the test particle itself is almost Gaussian. But for quantum turbulence, there are new measurements of Srinivasan and others in 2008 in a PRL that show that there the velocity itself of the test particle has power laws, right? And that is on page 19 here, this plot. So that is what Srinivasan and Paoletti and others measure. It's simply a power law, and for the velocity itself. And with a PhD student, we fitted that power law with the formula that you find on the next page. So, and that yields a very good fit. Probability density measured by Srinivasan and others is extremely well fitted in the entire range of velocities by this extremely simple formula. So you allow a non, this constant C I can't explain, but everything else is to the 3/2. So you see that is the distribution of velocity of a single test particle in a quantum turbulent flow. And for a large velocities V, you get here V squared, you get V to the minus 3 tails there. So it's power law in this time, in this case. And question, why is that the case? And again, I apologize, I just do very simple intuitive model, but the reason that we suggest in this PRE of 2013, so rather recent paper, is that in quantum turbulence you have these vortex tangles, which are and vortex lines, which you see here on page 22. Right, this is from the simulation of the nonlinear Schrödinger equation, of Gross-Pitezky equation. So in quantum turbulence, you have these very complicated patterns of vorticity strings. And they merge and annihilate at different times. And also, you have from the quantization of circulation, you basically know in the textbooks, you find this formula that the typical velocity, if you're at distance r from such a vortex line, goes like 1 over r, this is Planck's constant, that the mass of the fluid particle, right? So that means the typical velocity of a test particle that is very close here to such a vortex line, that diverges as 1 over r. And so it means it rapidly rotates around that vortex line, that test particle. Whereas if the particle is far away from the vortex line, then it is much more like ordinary Brownian motion, right? Because it's not disturbed by this vortex line. And that leads, in a sense, to superstatistics. Namely, we again assume that the basic local equation of the velocity is some sort of Langevin equation plus some rotational term here, which I omit now. And you see, if you have such an equation, if the gamma is small, if there's practically no damping, then you drive a system with a force and the velocity will become very big, right, on average. But if gamma is big, then there's a lot of damping and the velocity will be small. Therefore, the idea of that recent model is that the gamma is really depending on the distance of the test particle to the nearest vortex line, right? Because if it's very near, the particle should have a high velocity from this equation, right? So the gamma should be, the effective gamma should be small, whereas if it's far away from a vortex line, then the gamma should be bigger, you more or less have ordinary Brownian motion. And therefore the gamma, this friction constant, which in the statistical mechanics formalism is proportional to this parameter beta that fluctuates, we simply say that is proportional to r squared, where r is now the position of the test particle, the distance of the test particle to the nearest vortex element. And since we simply take then that distance to be randomly distributed, but we have two components, right, of this distance, because it's a three-dimensional flow there. If you are at a distance here, you have two components, x1, x2, of the distance to the nearest vortex element. And therefore, you end up with this idea that you get a chi-square superstatistics, but with very low n, n equals 2 only, because you have two components that describe the distance of the test particle to the nearest vortex element. And if n is equals 2, and I plug it into the formula that I wrote at the very beginning, you end up precisely with that formula. No doubt that is only a very crude model, but it is better than having nothing, right? And it explains, in a sense, why Srinivasan and these people see these power law distributions in quantum turbulence, whereas that power law is not seen in ordinary classical turbulence.
Doesn't that power law have an infinite expectation for kinetic energy?
Indeed, you are absolutely right. This formula, indeed, the kinetic energy is diverging, yeah? Because if you calculate the second moment, then this goes like b to the minus 3. If you plug in b squared to calculate the second moment, it goes like 1 over b, and you therefore have to introduce a cutoff to make these integrals converge. But it is this singularity, I think, is deeply rooted in this one, that basically the closer you get to the vortex core, from this formula, the velocity formula diverges, and therefore you get these extreme high probabilities to have high probabilities. In physical practice, of course, you will never get such an infinity, but there's a cutoff. And once you have a cutoff, then the integrals exist, yeah.
I don't see what is specific to quantum mechanics, because you can apply the same argument to vortex tubes in 3D turbulence.
Yeah, that's right.
Velocity is identical, and you don't have the edge of the end.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You would expect the same kind of probability in 3D turbulence, which apparently you don't see.
Well, I think there are papers who have seen power laws in 2D.
For 3D. I was thinking of 3D-like vortex tubes.
3D-like vortex tubes, yeah. Well,
In 3D turbulence.
Yeah, I think in 2D turbulence, people do see power laws in nebula. In 3D, I'm not sure. But anyway, I think it's... So that it's, as I said, a model that seems to be applicable here, at least in a crude approximation. I'm not sure whether how to apply to other problems, but at least it is a first step to understand these power laws in quantum turbulence. And also, of course, you can do a simulation of the equation, of the Gross-Pitezky equation, and in the numerical simulation, you also find these power laws. And so such a numerical simulation could really check this prediction we have that the velocity, if you condition it, let's say, on the distance from the nearest vortex element, that could be calculated in such a simulation. If you condition it on the, and in this model, it is Gaussian, right? So one could check whether these assumptions are true or whether they just randomly yield the correct result. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I think my time is over. We did a couple of other things. We looked at wind gusts, where we look at time series really measured by people of wind velocity distributions. And it turns out that gives an example of the third class here. Log normal was relevant for classical turbulence. If you look at velocity differences, the chi-square superstatistic seems to be relevant for quantum turbulence if you look at the original velocity, and for sort of atmospheric turbulence at the time scale of wind, we find when we look at data that this distribution is there, and we don't have an explanation why it is that one, but that distribution seems to be best fitting the wind data. Yeah. Okay, well, that's all I wanted to say.
I did have, but I was going to ask afterwards. I don't know, you're reading my mind?
You were raising your hand.
Oh.
What sort of progress has been made in trying to arrive at first principles derivation for one of these distributions? Are there some non-trivial models going beyond?
Yeah, so in statistical mechanics, of course, people like maximizing some entropy, right? And so people even then for the f of beta, they also introduce an entropy and getting then the f of beta from that entropy. But to be honest, I think there's no progress in the sense that given a complex system, I would really like to know what type of distribution I should expect for that complex system, given the type of boundary conditions, given the type of PDE or whatever that describes it. And there's no progress in that direction that you have such a theory. But it is more that empirically in most things that are of practical relevance, and you see a few more applications for systems outside the turbulence community here, it turns out basically end up with those three and not much more. So, but there's no deeper understanding of that.
There are some network models for which they seem rather artificial, but they're out of equilibrium and people have exact solutions. I wonder if...
That's another possibility. So you can, for example, in network models, you can have a random network where often the degree distribution is a Poisson distribution or so, and then you can let the parameters of that degree distribution you can fluctuate that. That means you have networks which have spatial inhomogeneities, right? Where in one region the Poisson distribution of the random network has a different parameter than in another one. And then again, if you look at the entire network of these networks, then you get a power law out of the distribution of the parameter of the degree distribution of the single networks. So there are many types of applications of this stuff in areas outside turbulence, in network theory as well. That's right. Yeah.
The question, so yesterday I was looking at the point vortex system which has negative temperatures in it.
Ah,
okay. And the F of beta, the question is, none of these statistics would apply to that case because you have to consider beta ranging from minus infinity to plus infinity.
Very good. Yeah, I'm looking for other examples, really. So if you can tell, or if you have data, how the F of beta looks like.
I have the data for the P of E, but I don't know F of beta, but clearly you should be able to do the, but it's not the Laplace transforming work because you have the entire range of minus infinity to infinity.
Yeah.
I don't know how to compute the F of beta.
Okay, so we have an algorithm where we can, if you have an arbitrary time series generated by a black box, right? Then we have an algorithm that can check whether such a superstatistical model makes sense for the time series, whether it really consists of a time series that, let's say, for a while is Gaussian distributed with that beta and at another time with another beta. So in your system, if you give me a time series, I could run that program and then tell you what the likely distribution of F of beta is in your system. And
well, the equivalent of time series for me, I suppose, would be samples.
Yeah.
So I would basically take a sample.
That's right. Yeah.
Point some kinetic energy, do it over and over and endless number of times, and then presumably that's what you need to.
That's right.
All right,
yeah.
That's interesting. I'll talk to you after.
Yeah.
Any other questions? All right. Let's start the show.
Okay.